for 5/5/2005, it's Video Games Hot Dog, Issue 5. Hey guys, are you ready to Video Games Hot Dog again?
Sure am.
It's been 8 days since our last confession.
Yeah.
What do you have to confess this week, Kevin? I'm sorry, wait, I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
Fuck.
Yeah, no, I was going to try to bring it back to that, but you brought it back already to yourself.
I need one of those. Maybe you're right. Maybe we need a schedule. We need a rigidly enforced schedule.
Not a schedule, a chart. Just
all right,
a chart.
So one person in the forums agreed with me that requiring us to talk about not video games in between every talking about video games.
And like two or three people were like, yeah, I really like the random stuff. Please add that.
But they want random video game related stuff.
No, please talk about random stuff. It is enjoyable.
Please talk about random stuff.
That's what they said.
Okay, I'm gonna need you to make a chart.
Okay.
That we roll on what random stuff to talk about.
I think today we should talk about robins in the springtime, and the first sightings of them.
Robin Givens.
Yes, Robin Quivers.
You really put the
is she?
You really put the first syllable in games. That's funny because there's only one syllable in games. 100% of our studio audience agrees with Zach. Anyway, what have you guys been up to? We can at least get started just shooting the shit the way that we do. We're recording things in a different order, trying to get our energy levels higher, our power levels.
Woo! I've been catching up on podcasts and working on my my extremely manly embroidery.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You know, my mom has a special sewing machine that you could just make a GIF.
Oh, yeah.
And then it would just do all the embroidery for you.
Oh, that's no fun.
But it's been rendered obsolete by a robot.
Are you embroidering or are you cross-stitching?
Well, cross-stitching, but that's a form of embroidery.
You know, it also, that her sewing machine is also actually capable of writing puzzles that no one will ever be able to solve. So you have been comprehensively, if we could just teach it to smoke cigarettes, it would have every aspect of you.
So fired.
Cross stitch. You got your video games cross stitch.
Yep, I'm more than 2/3 or possibly 3/4 finished.
Are you doing it to practice for a cross stitch hero?
Cross stitch hero. I'm trying to think of what that would look like.
It would look like a big line of things, and then blue thread in this row. All right, now some green thread in this row.
Come down the screen.
Red thread in this row. Yeah, that'd be great.
I wonder what the controller would look like.
It would be a needle and thread, and a cross stitch. You'd be really making a cross stitch.
Yeah, you'd have four different colors of thread, and you'd have your digital pad,
right,
with an overlay on it.
Yeah,
if you're playing pro needles. I did not realize when I bought the keyboard for Rock Band 3, and I didn't realize that apparently the non-pro, like the default way of playing with that, just has 5 keys.
Yeah.
Like that you just put your hands on, like, that is the easiest possible instrument to play. Like, I cannot imagine that being even marginally challenging, even on the hardest expert song, because you don't have to move. Like, the whole thing with the guitar is that there are more buttons than you have fingers to push the buttons with, right?
And the
drums are super hard, right? But that keyboard, I cannot believe that they even included that as a feature, because there is zero coordination required.
Somebody who does not know how to play the piano at all.
I don't think that matters. You're going to say that to me, somebody who knows how to play the piano, that it seems like it's super simplistic, but...
Well, okay, let me back up. Somebody who is bad at rhythm games in general, I think is going to have a really hard time trying to do some crazy keyboard stuff, and just doing the buttons is hard enough.
Oh, okay. I guess.
It
is equivalent to a guitar with only 4 buttons that you don't have to strum.
But it's 5 buttons, right?
I'm saying it is equivalent in terms
of difficulty.
It's one
louder.
In terms of difficulty, it is equivalent to a guitar with 4 buttons that you don't have to strum.
But don't they do more complicated chords? Like, aren't there like 3 or 4 buttons pressed down at the same time sometimes?
They do that on the guitar.
Okay. I've never gotten that high. Like, I never have had to do more than 2 or 3 things.
You never got so high that you had the confidence to...
Like, they could have all 5 buttons. I think you could make it hard with just 5 buttons.
Make it hard with just 5 buttons. I can make you a man for just $9.
I can name that tune in one note.
One note?
I saw that happen once.
No.
Yes, it was crazy.
How did they do that?
I don't know how he did it. The two contestants auctioned back and forth for a bit, and the one guy just kind of shook his head and was like, you could see him thinking, fuck it. And he said, I can name that tune in one note. And they said, okay, play him a note. Bong. And he named a song. And
what
was
the song?
I don't remember. It was ages ago. But huh. It was nuts.
That's the kind of cocky bullshit that never works.
Yeah.
Bukkake bullshit?
Yeah, that's the kind of bukkake bullshit.
Hey, what have you guys been playing? You been playing any video games?
I've been playing some video games.
What?
Did you do a break there?
No.
Okay.
We're not going to.
Okay.
Jesus.
All right.
Now I'm going to have to take a break to edit out you second guessing the show structure all the damn time.
Because it's better with more breaks.
No, it's not.
You jerk face.
Okay. I will insert. Okay. You know what I'm going to do?
Yeah.
I'm going to go back and insert a break in between each word of the sentence that you just
uttered.
Oh
my God, please do.
It's going to
be
awesome. Yeah. No, I'm going to.
Better
thank
with
you
more
for
breaks.
Thank you for adding.
And now all of you listening at home understand what you just heard.
Yeah. Thank you. thank you, Kevin, for making it so my editing job, which I have a limited amount of time to perform tonight, is going to take even longer.
Yep. Yeah. Your life is so
but
hard.
But you'll feel good while you're doing it.
I will. I'll be grinning from ear to ear. Have you been playing any video games, you fucker?
I've been playing several video games, actually. I've been taking notes because my memory is terrible. So I mentioned last week I had played a little bit of Galcon on my telephone.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing where you are manning the bridge of a ship shaped like a woman?
No. you're thinking of the bath salts.
Lady Bridge.
Lady Bridge. Poop deck.
Take me away.
Wait. Are you, gal, lady, poop? That's your free association?
Ladies poop.
I thought you were making a cow.
Ladies
you're
poop.
Not making a Calgon reference?
No, I was making that's a con. Funny. Like, you man the con, but you're on the con
Gal-con?
Of a gal.
I get it. Okay. Yeah. Now, so I had been playing Galcon Light, which is just like the free version. However.
That's just the thing where you've got like the areas with different numbers of troops that slowly build up, and then you
planets,
do like
yeah.
a, you drag you from one to the other, and it sends half of them or whatever.
Or you can send a percentage. Of them, yeah, you can set the percentage. And so I was like, you know, if I'm doing this for video games hot dog, I should be more professional about it. So I went and bought the full version, which has a couple different single player modes, which were sort of okay, not crazy interesting.
On your iPhone, right?
This is on the iPhone.
Just on your iPhone.
Yeah.
So if you want to play this game, listeners,
borrow
Kevin's iPhone.
And they also then have a multiplayer version where I got my ass handed to me over and over and over again. It is so hard. Like, the people who are playing this, I think in part because it is so old, the people who are still playing it are, like, so hardcore and good at it that, like, it's like playing StarCraft if you came into it, like, a year after it was released. Where you know you're just getting Zerg rushed all the time or tank rushed or whatever, and so it was kind of fun, but like the multiplayer, I would rather just play with my friends, and I don't have any friends, so yeah. I did that. I bought the Sword and Sorcery. The Super Brothers came out for the iPhone, iPod Touch.
Cool.
And started playing that on my phone. I'm about 47% of the way through, more or less.
When we got our company iPad to use as the point of sale system, that was the first thing I did, was I bought and downloaded Sword and Sorcery. I got to the first boss fight and was so, not the first boss fight, the first like Trigon fight thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was so fucking aggravated by that fight that I put it down and never picked it up again, even though I really, really want to play the rest of it and I really liked it.
I died the first time, but the second time I beat it.
I died the first time, started over, it took like a minute and a half to get to where I died the second time and had no idea what I should have done to avoid it. The fact that it takes away all your fucking hit points and starts you, when you restart this boss fight,
you didn't
have to spend
any mushrooms
a whole bunch of time going through the easy initial boring parts of the fight again, and you don't have any goddamn hit points.
Well, but you didn't have a mushroom to refill your hit points.
No, I'd used them.
Oh, I didn't know that did that.
That's yeah.
No, I had used them trying to figure out some of the.
Yeah, that's what I knew they were for.
I feel that I solved most of the puzzles in that game without understanding how they worked.
Wait. So if you eat a mushroom on a screen with
with those sprite spirits or whatever.
It tells you what to click on or something?
It doesn't. It tells you what you can click on.
It tells you what things on that screen are alive. And the clickables for those puzzles are always
living. So the very first mushroom I found, this was very confusing to me. The very first mushroom I found, I used on the screen that I found it. And like there was a pool that showed up when I had ingested the mushroom, but then it went away. And there was nothing on the screen that I could click on that did anything at all.
I mean, it's possible that if you use it on a screen where there's no interactable live objects, it just doesn't do anything. I did not make that connection.
But one of those little pools showed up. And I'm like, what the hell? So but, I felt like those mushrooms only showed up on screens where there weren't anything, where there wasn't anything to click on.
There was definitely one near the sheep. And when I don't understand how I solved the sheep puzzle.
You just click on all the sheep.
No,
it's
they reverse, and some of them sometimes clicking on one turns another one off, like the fucking trees thing.
Really?
I don't understand. Think it was that complicated. I think you just had to find the order that they needed to be clicked.
I clicked on all eight of them, and then it was done. Like, and I clicked on the eight trees, and then it was like I did not realize these were puzzles.
There
I was
were
like
nine trees, and it took me.
No, there were eight.
There's a couple different tree ones.
Okay,
there was.
It took me 50 tries to finish the tree one.
Whoa.
Trying to figure out what order to click them on that clicking later ones wouldn't turn previous ones off. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I still don't understand the puzzles even after having solved.
Well, reading the tome, it said that you have to find the pairs. So I think you just have to click on each pair of tree together. Hmm. Pairs of trees together.
Regarding the fights, if you hold down your shield,
I know. And
you heal.
I know.
So wait, what?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Why is that never explained?
It is.
Where?
In a tooltip when you lose.
Yeah, if you lose a couple times, read the tome.
I haven't read the tome since I died that one time, but yeah, that was I was like that's new.
Yeah,
news to me.
It took me a little.
You hold down the shield, you heal. Mm-hmm. That seems
really really slowly.
It's really slow,
and you can't really tell that anything's going on. Like it's like every 30 seconds.
Like if a triangle heals you, the build up when you restart the fight is long enough that you can get like all of your health but one back.
I see.
Sword and Sorcery is available for iPhone now too.
That's why
the last show it came out in a universal format.
I think the game would be better on a larger screen.
Yeah. You're welcome to play it on the iPad.
No, I mean I kind of want to play it on the phone as a platform thing.
I buried the iPad somewhere in the yard, by the way.
Cool. That's gonna make taking credit cards that much easier. Yeah, so I did that.
We hand them a bill, which is also a treasure map.
So my girlfriend had never heard of Bejeweled before.
Gosh,
this was like as of like a month
ago.
How
do you be alive and on the internet and not hear of Bejeweled?
You know, she just hadn't. You know, it's just sort of like skipped her cognizance or whatever. And so
this whole story is just an excuse for you to try and convince our listeners that you're not gay.
No, not really.
I don't believe that. I don't believe it.
Me having a girlfriend does not preclude me from being gay.
Oh, right.
Right. I'm just saying that if that's what I was trying to do, I would have failed just from a logical point of view.
Anyway, so you have a girlfriend who's been living under a rock.
Yes. She's also Canadian. She's not actually Canadian.
What country is just under Iraq?
Yeah. Canada.
Sub-Iraq.
No.
Iraq, well, level B1.
Kuwait, right? Kuwait's the one that's...
Well, that's south. It's not below.
Oh, you mean like underneath?
Yes.
You mean like hell.
Like down.
I see.
Iraq, hell.
Wow, so wait, south is not down? I thought the enemy gate
that's
was
so,
always...
That's
the
south.
The enemy gate is always south. Yeah. The enemy is always Mexican.
Oh, man. Okay.
But that's one of those syllogisms, right? I mean, I know that Mexicans are always the enemy. I don't know if the enemy are always... Wait. Hey, is Socrates good at golf?
I think you need to make a chart.
Okay.
Perhaps some sort of Van der Graaf judge.
Van der Graaf diagram.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry I keep stepping on your story
that's
with dumb jokes. I'm actually not.
So as soon as she discovered the existence of this, she spent some time trying to find like a good free one on her phone. She has an Android, and she couldn't find one that she really liked. But then she found sort of a Bejeweled clone on the internet called Fairies versus Darklings. Huh. It's Bejeweled plus a little bit of like extraneous stuff, and it's on like an Atari website. Like they have like an Atari like Flash Arcade or something on an Atari website. But it is kind of sketchy, like, how hard they push you to give them money, right? Because you can, like, So you can earn some currency in the game.
Does it have like a role-playing game framework? Is it like puzzle questy?
You're not like leveling up a character. You are exploring more areas and the enemies get harder and stuff like that, but you don't actually improve at all as a character, as far as I can tell. You basically acquire a single currency through play, but very slowly. And of course you can buy, well, you don't buy that currency, but you buy like Atari coins, and you can use those to buy the stuff that you would spend the currency on. But like, they're all consumables, and they, like, you can buy them. It's hard to explain the structure, like why the structure is so sketchy in my mind, but it's like, while you're in a fight, if you want a spell, you have to have purchased it before the fight, or during the fight, you can click on a button and buy it with those coins during the fight, right? So if you want to do something in the fight, like send all the enemies, you know, sort of backwards for a little bit, because like there's the way that they do it is to time it. They have enemies sort of coming across the screen or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. It's like, it's the, oh, I'm so close on this level. If only I had this spell. Well, you know, here's this thing which would, you know, make you win the game that you can spend real money on.
Huh.
So I just feel like it's the way it's structured seems very sketchy to me. But anyway,
it's something that a bunch of people, you know, spent a bunch of time and money building and then gave away for free, right?
Sure. So, you can totally play it for free, but also the difficulty curve ramps up. It's like super, super easy and slow and fun, you know, at the very beginning. But then by the end, it gets so hard to do without those like spells,
right?
That it makes me wonder if it was designed with a profit motive in mind, or if it was designed as a game.
Everything is designed with a profit motive.
I don't think anything we've done is ever.
Sure.
Well, not ever, but like very little of what we do is profit motivated.
Sure, you know what? Speaking of weird things that you wouldn't think would work as a microtransaction model, I remember actually giving $10 once to this game that was basically Arkanoid with microtransactions.
Oh, yeah. I remember that game.
It was like a role-playing. It was like a...
Sort of, yeah. Where you'd explore different sectors, and you could go to like five different sectors of space a day, and each of them was an Arkanoid thing. And you had these like quests to go unlock things out of the bricks.
Our friend
places.
Dave got really into that and played that for a long time,
yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah. It was kind of cool.
I never played it, but I the idea of it seemed really cool. Like, the idea... like, it seems like there's been a... I don't know. Not a resurgence, but a surgence of games that take like... fun games and use that as the mechanism by which to advance,
progress in like a metagame, yeah, like a RPG framework.
RPG framework, and that seems like a really cool idea, right? Because like these, like Tetris is fun, but I wouldn't want to play it 100 times. But you know, playing a board of Tetris to
kill a skeleton
would be kind of neat.
Would it? I mean, is that the thing? Are we
not,
just
not Tetris in particular? But you know.
But what I'm saying is, are we just acknowledging? Oh, right. Okay. So putting an RPG framework on this makes me play it way longer than it's fun. It gives me the motivation to spend my time on something that I am not enjoying, as evidenced by the fact that I would not be doing it if I wasn't killing a skeleton in the background.
So, you know, let's sort of back up for a second and talk about the notion of. I think it was the guy who made Bejeweled was like, he was the one that was talking about how women will play this game and they like it on endless mode where you're not earning any points and you're not like accomplishing anything. But he said that they likened it to knitting, right? And they really enjoyed the idea that it was just kind of like knitting, right? Which is something
which
that they like in and of themselves.
Somewhere. They wouldn't just knit and then throw away the stuff, right?
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they will knit something and then just like...
And then unknit.
They'll like pull the yarn out and like knit it again, like just as practice, right? Like most of the time I feel like people are probably making something, but not always. And it's not like...
Okay,
you know,
doing an individual knitting stitch is not fun, but having the goal of making a sock is not. I mean, I think
right? Like
I think though that it is hard. Like a lot of people would argue, we don't think of things in these terms, but a lot of people would argue, no, that creates a tangible good, and so it is just different than having a really sweet sword in a video game.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that in the sense compared to my cross stitching, because I mean the cross stitching itself is not very entertaining, but. I every character that I finish is, oh, hey, look at that. And I know that eventually I'm going to have an entire thing I can hang on my wall.
Sure.
I can't imagine doing that entire cross stitch and then pulling all the stitches out. That just seems nuts.
Well, I mean, have you ever seen like crazy Buddhist mandalas?
Well, yeah.
right?
Sandcastles. I mean, like,
there's all kinds of like ephemeral. Sure,
but I think that those are the exception rather than the rule, but, right? I mean, but, because
so, but somewhere between a mandala and a cross stitch is this virtual character that you've created, right? Like, it doesn't exist
with
anywhere.
A super sweet purple sword.
Yeah, what if, but you can go and look at it. Like, you know, if, sure, if it's persistent, you can go and look at it anytime you want. And you can be like, oh yeah, I remember that. Like, it's,
yeah,
kind of
like a Minecraft castle is not that, anything
like your cross stitch. You're gonna hang it up on your wall.
Log in and look at
you're
it.
Gonna hang up your cross stitch on your wall, yeah, or whatever, and you're gonna be like, you know, that'll remind you of something. Like, you can take a screenshot of,
yeah,
your,
I mean, I guess that's a good
your
point,
World,
right,
of Warcraft,
like, a virtual item isn't any less real than a cross stitch on a long enough timeline, right? Like, everything gets destroyed when the sun goes supernova, right? Like,
sure,
it's, is this the ashes of a hard drive platter or the ashes of some thread? But, like, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, Farmville. Let's take Farmville.
Sure, super
Farmville
sleazy.
Is, you are just building, you're building a farm, and a lot of the things that you pay for or whatever are just to decorate it and, like, have other people look at your, how cool your farm is or whatever, right? And, like, that is something that's totally virtual, but people get really into.
If there's one thing that makes me happy, it's more companies trying to do things the way that Zynga does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. And then the other thing that I played can segue nicely into what you've been up to, Zach, is Portal 2. Because I played through the single player campaign, which was a lot of fun. Sort of. I have this sort of problem where I just have to explore every possible space. So it definitely took me probably twice as long.
Yeah. You like to explore outside the rules, and I feel like that's biting you in the ass.
Yeah. With Portal 2, the single player campaign, like, the puzzles were like, there was a review of Portal 2 by Yahtzee on
The Escapist.
Yeah, Escapist.
Zero punctuation.
Thank you. Speaking of
microtransactions and trying really hard to get you to spend money, I came so close to giving the Escapist money for that Founders Club thing, because what they fucking do is that you can't watch any of their videos on your phone unless you are behind the paywall. And I was like, you know, I should do that. I should give them money anyway. But then I'm like, you know, the fact that this is such an obvious manipulation of me into giving them money for, like, this thing that there's no real reason for it to cost anything made me not want to do it. So I don't know. It's like, I decided that I was going to give them some money, but then once
when
I
you say
understood,
on your phone, you mean
on your iPhone.
Yeah. Because they have to change it from whatever codec they're using to something else.
They have an HTML5 version, but it is only accessible to paid members. Right. So I don't want to start pirating zero punctuation because that's horseshit.
Right.
But it's weird because it was like I had fully decided
that I was
going to pay
for this thing.
But you can also
just watch that for free in a browser.
I know, but not while I'm out smoking a cigar. Right. And it was
just
I would watch their other videos if I could do it when I wasn't doing anything.
You could do it through a virtual terminal.
Oh, yeah, I could. Would sound come through VNC?
You probably could configure something.
Hmm. Anyway, it was weird that I. I'm like, okay, so they've convinced me to give them some money, but then once I thought about it, I was like, no, they convinced me to give them money, therefore they don't deserve it.
Huh.
Like, once I understood the mechanism by which they had, like, manipulated me.
If they had tricked you into giving you money, then they would have been fine.
Yeah,
but
I would have done it happily. Anyway, yeah, so we played the Portal 2 co-op, and it was...
Yeah, and so
we got, like,
three-fifths
of the way
through. Yeah.
Super fucking fun.
It was a lot of fun.
I kind of don't want to play the rest of it, because once I've played it, I won't be able to look forward to it anymore.
Unless they come up with more levels.
There's DLC coming out.
Okay.
Like,
free DLC.
So, for people who have not yet done it, you play through Portal, the single-player game, and then you find a friend who has not yet played through the co-op version, and you play it with them, and it is just a tremendous amount of fun. And I think there's a bunch of different philosophies. We were not in the same space, so we couldn't talk to each other while we were doing it. We used limited sort of the text chat. We weren't like on Skype or on the phone or anything while we were playing it.
I kind of wish that we had not even done that. I kind of wish we had just tried to do it with the gestures and stuff.
I
think that would be fun and cute.
It'd be an interesting experiment.
It would have taken probably an
extra
half
taken,
hour.
Also because it would have been impossible to collaborate in your figuring out.
We didn't collaborate in figuring out.
That's the thing. Like
one of us would solve the puzzle and be like, you do this, and then the other person would do it. And then it was great because it was 50-50. Yeah,
very naturally switched. And I think it was because we came at it with very similar approaches to problems and very similar levels of skill with that game, I mean, having played the single player very recently. Mm-hmm. So it was just, I don't know. It was awesome.
Yeah, like one of us would come to a room and then we'd like we'd like put a portal somewhere and like walk through it and see like what we could do, and then somebody else would be figuring out something out, and then like somebody would eventually figure out what the whole thing was supposed to be like. And like it just, yeah, it was very organic, and it was a lot of fun. Hmm. And like, you know, it would be awesome if there was some way to have some content like this that was like puzzly like this that was procedurally generated and you could cooperatively solve levels.
You know what I've been seeing a lot of shades of in stuff is, why couldn't you let people make user-generated levels? No, which you solves that.
Totally,
right?
Could.
You totally could, and I think maybe they will. Right? They sort of open the veil a little bit. Like, you see, you know, all the outsides of rooms and stuff, and like, why couldn't you just build a kit that let people make a room? Right? Mm. I mean, you could even do it in the fiction.
You might could do it in Gary's mod.
Yeah.
You know, the user-created content will vary tremendously in quality, and you know, here's a question.
Yeah, but if it's on Steam, it'll be moderated heavily, and it'll be rated heavily.
How has Little Big Planet done in terms of, like, it's been a couple years now.
I don't know. I haven't heard anything about it since
the fundamental gameplay of Little Big Planet is so ass. It is just such shitty, floaty platforming that it makes me angry. It had so much potential, and just getting the fundamentals of it wrong made it so I have zero interest.
Because
they
kind of broke the, like, what is it, the Mario rule or whatever, to have like really responsive, very sort of concrete reactions to stuff that you did.
And there has to have been a reason for that, right? I'm sure they knew that it sucked and were like, this is the best we can do and still accomplish the other things that we're setting out to accomplish.
Was it multiplayer over network?
I don't know.
Stuff or something?
Maybe.
Huh.
So yeah, that's
what I've been up to.
Yeah, you took notes in that. Your section of the What Have You Been Playing was like the length of the entire What Have You Been Playing section of previous episodes. We just start doing longer shows.
You think?
We should.
Yeah,
I'm down with that.
We might not be able to to broadcast them all on the thing that we broadcast.
We could have
them
extras.
On, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, we could. I could just do like an hour cut for that broadcast, and then yeah. So what I've been playing is that Portal 2 co-op and continuing to play Rift.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still
playing Zaxxon.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Could. Yeah. I'm getting into the like, kind of mid-levels, and it's got that weird thing where there's a lot of people, I think there's a lot of trial accounts doing stuff in the early level zones, and then there's a lot of level-capped characters doing stuff in the high-level zones.
And nobody in the
middle. In the middle, yeah, most of the like world event things are just kind of sitting there undone and undoable in a lot of cases by a single person, which is a problem, right?
That's annoying.
What it makes me want is I don't know if you guys have heard of this game, Kingdom of Loathing, but... So what we do with Kingdom of Loathing is you play through over and over again, right? Like, the fundamental gameplay is doing the level progression in the RPG, then starting over with, like, a repeated new game plus as a core mechanic. If you did a mainstream MMO that was like that, like, there was some benefit to just playing through the game, then suddenly all of your content at every level is pretty vibrant.
We might see that eventually. It seems like people are starting to get dissatisfied with
end game rating models.
Yeah, with the leveling game being so different from the raid game at the end, and the raiders don't want to play the level game, and the level players don't want something more at the end than raiding that they're not interested in.
Just to get pessimistic right off the bat, though, like, I mean, imagine a World of Warcraft game where you played through to the level cap and then you got some shiny thing and then you started over and you got to play through again as a different class, and then you got some benefit the more times you did it, right? Because you have to actually encourage people to do it. You can't raid this week because you just restarted.
Well,
right?
Unless there's roles for everybody, right?
Roles for low-level people.
Yeah.
But, I mean, then you're still... If there are things that have optimal rewards that have roles for everybody, that's the only place that everybody goes.
I think a game...
Right? So
that,
it doesn't actually spread the population out.
I think a game that did this would probably not have a rating end game.
You don't think?
But could they have cooperative content of any kind that was meaningful because everybody's all over the place all the time?
Well, I mean, the leveling game in World of Warcraft used to have cooperative content that was meaningful. There are group quests and
leveling
dungeons.
You couldn't have a group of 20 people, like, they're not going to progress at the same pace, right? So you can't have content for 20 people at a time. You can't really have content for 5 people at a time if you want them to be the same 5 people, because those 5 people are almost invariably not going to level at the same pace.
You know, I wonder if World of Warcraft isn't moving toward a system where you can do stuff Like, you can artificially inflate your level for grouping content.
They definitely do that in, what, City of Heroes?
Yeah, City of Heroes. And the thing about City of Heroes was that you have a really small set of abilities, and they all scale with your level, right? And World of Warcraft, you have a huge set of abilities which now all scale with your level, right? They can scale them down. There are no longer ranks of skills that you have to buy. You just buy the skill, and then it gets more powerful as time goes by, which... It seems to me like, I mean, apart from the simplicity angle, it's like, all right, well, we've decided you're going to have all the same abilities. You just don't have to pay for them every time you level, which, you know, that isn't like, man, whatever. You know, they make everything easier over time, but yeah, I don't know. So in Rift, like, also, I randomly joined a guild. Like, I did a pickup group run through a dungeon, and somebody was like, hey, you want to join our guild? And I was like, okay, because there are like guild perks and stuff. They've stolen that from the, precognitively stole guild perks and shit from World of Warcraft. They didn't really steal it from World of Warcraft. You know,
they steal it from
us. I don't know what the first game to have like. Your guild would level up, and as you leveled up, you got like buffs and abilities that you could use because guild you were in a guild. Anyway, so I was like, yeah, I want to be in a guild. You know, maybe there'll be people to play with. And then I logged on yesterday. Guild had been disbanded, and everybody had gotten kicked out.
Wow.
I don't know. There's some bullshit drama. Why can't you have guilds without drama?
That is something that I have found is it is impossible to have a guild without drama. Like, every guild I have ever been in has had some kind of drama.
Just like it's impossible to watch Gilmore Girls without crying.
Jumpbox was pretty drama-free.
No.
I think
you, the fact that you're just persona non grata there now speaks to that.
Yeah. Oh, there was drama. It's just that you're not cool enough to have heard of it. And that's why you think there was no drama. There was a bunch of drama, people arguing about whether you were cool enough to tell them about the drama.
Were you the guild leader?
For them to tell you.
I was the guild leader for a while.
Did you raid with your girlfriend?
In my experience, 100% of guild drama was centered around the guild leader's girlfriend.
I just had the keys to the bank and new hires.
Okay.
I didn't run raids.
Okay. Because it seems like the guild leader is either the best healer or the best tank, and their significant other is the other one of those things. And
I mean,
then they break up, and then everything goes to shit.
All the drama we had was drama caused by pugs because we did not have enough people to do a full raid, and so we had to recruit.
All the drama
all
was
these
saved
dudes.
For.
Well, so then you didn't. And so by not, you, dudes, you did not have a full guild.
Cracks. Yeah, we didn't have.
Okay.
Guild.
So then that you can have a guild of one person is not going to have a lot of trauma, right? So sure.
It depends on who it is.
I guess you could have a guild that is manned by somebody who has 25 distinct personalities,
and they solo multibox.
Yeah.
Somebody's multiboxing each of their personalities.
That would be kind of awesome.
Riff, what have you been playing?
Not a whole lot other than the assignment for this week. I played a couple of random iPad games, the names of which I've forgotten. PopCap published a pretty decent Find the Hidden Object game, and that.
Is that a genre that's interesting?
Not really. It's kind of a guilty pleasure of mine.
I mean, do you go out in the world and look for things that are hidden? You like look at a scene, you're like, I can totally see that thing now.
Just in the interest of I'm also not gay, I watched my girlfriend play some hidden object games on an iPad. The one she was playing actually seemed like it was maybe kind of cool. It was...
Which one?
It was, I forget what it was called, but it was very like Seventh Guest light. You know, it was like you're exploring this haunted mansion or whatever, and there are just... The mini games were not super interesting. The puzzles were not really difficult at all, but they were puzzles. And there's no reason that you couldn't make a good game in that framework.
I like them as... I don't know. It's I play a couple levels of them before I go to bed. It's that sort of thing.
Oh, I see.
And I also played a little bit of a snooker game, which was kind of interesting.
Snooker?
Yeah. Like
isn't that Jersey
British
Shore
pool
app?
Pool... No.
Okay.
But
you're thinking of Wolf
and that
Blitzer's,
was okay,
the
but
Situation
it was,
Room.
It was mainly interesting because I'd never played snooker before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what snooker is.
It is. It's like pool, except there's more balls. There's like 15 red balls and 6 or 8 balls that are
of
other colors.
Is it on a rectangular table?
Yeah, it's on the same sort of table, pockets in the corners. And the way it works is you have to sink a red ball and then you have to sync a colored ball. The colored balls are all different points.
Is it a racist game?
No.
Okay. So why are you calling them and colored balls?
Because they are of different colors.
Like okay. Like the races
there's
of man.
There's a pink one and a green one and yes, a black right. one.
So like girls, girls, Martians, and Eskimos.
Yes.
All right.
And so and you have to alternate between syncing red ones and colored ones until all the red ones are gone, and then you have to sync all the colored ones in their point value order.
Okay.
And the
do you pull the colored ones back out? Or
yes, as the until the end game. And so it's interesting because if you're good and can knock in a red and get your ball set up the shot, you can alternate between red and black just in a infinite string of them until you run out of red balls.
Huh.
Because the black one keeps coming back. And
it is. I've watched people play it at like a pool hall. Like I used to go to a pool hall a couple times a week with this buddy of mine that really like that's just what we did for fun was go mm-hmm. and play pool. And watching guys play snooker, the games would just go on and on and on and on mm-hmm. and on. Like it was possible for skilled players to just for those games to consist of a really large number of shots.
Yeah, yeah.
It seemed.
Huh. I wonder if it's like their version of cricket.
I don't know. Yeah.
There was you were playing some sort of flash game shortly before the show today.
Oh yeah, it was like a Ludum Dare game where you had to. It was like a procedurally generated like well that you had to jump up and shoot at slimes and stuff, and then you collect these currency, and then you'd upgrade your guy and do it again.
What is Ludum Dare?
It's like a I don't know who puts it on or whatever, but it's just a thing where it's like two-day people have 48 hours to make a game.
Yeah. It was for a 2-day game. It was pretty good.
Pretty polished, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that because of, not necessarily because of stuff like that, but stuff like that is more interesting than it used to be because there are so many things like Flixel or whatever. Like, there are so many engines.
Toolkits.
That you can Unity just, like, all you have to do is design a game, yeah. right? Not all you have to do.
You have to know how to
like,
use the tools.
You don't have to like, write your own collision detection and shit mm-hmm. anymore to do a thing like this.
Yeah.
I'm glad that that exists, and I hope they continue to get better because I've got a lot of ideas of games that I would really like to play that don't exist.
Yeah. And if you can make them yourself, I mean, instead of having to actually spend years learning to program correctly. Yeah. You made your own game of columns or whatever in that weird programmable handheld thing.
Yeah, programmed Bejeweled into an 8x8 RGB LED display. Which chewed through a 9-volt battery in about 5 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Could you plug it into AC power?
And yeah. All of our 9-volt batteries are in a trapped drawer in the kitchen.
Yes.
The way this house that we use as an office is designed, the listeners will be fascinated by this.
I'm sure.
You cannot get to the battery drawer without opening the stove.
It's not necessarily a battery drawer. It's just a small drawer
it's
in
the
kitchen
with all the batteries in it.
It is now, but it didn't have to be.
Right. We used to have hens.
Hens?
Yes, battery hens. I don't know what that means, but it's a thing.
Okay.
All right, so that's what we've been playing, guys.
It's always advisable to make jokes about things that you don't know what they are.
Time for our 10th break.
Yay!
So this week's assignment was some bullshit.
It was not.
If you ask me.
I wouldn't call it bullshit. It was not as fun as I remember from my childhood.
Yeah, so, I mean, I definitely had fond memories of it and was frustrated by some things, but I think we were frustrated by different things.
So what we're talking about is the Lurking Horror.
The Lurking Horror. Well, there have been huge advances in interactive fiction over the years, and
Going back. You
was,
feel the pain.
Hard,
There were... The thing that frustrated me about the Lurking Horror is that I wandered around, I did a bunch of shit, I looked at a bunch of things, I picked up a bunch of things, I figured out how to find some stuff that took several actions to perform, but by and large, I could not tell which things were puzzles. There was no, like... So, when I started looking at the InvisiClues, one of the first things in the InvisiClues was, how do I get past the junk room? And I thought, what the fuck? How were you supposed to know that the junk room was a thing that you could get past? And I didn't go back and read the description again, but the junk room explicitly spelled out, there is nothing of interest in here.
And if you tried, it said there might be a door to the east.
Did
but
it?
You, yes, it did. And if there might be a door to the east, but you can't see it past all the junk. And if you tried to go east, it said you can't move all this stuff by hand. You need some way to move all this
Maybe
stuff.
Maybe I should just read more carefully.
Yeah, I mean, it was like very explicit.
Nah. I never would have figured it out. I never would have
There
figured
was a that forklift
out.
That could only move in the basement, like for five rooms. And that was one elevator. You could move into the elevator?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't try moving the elevator.
You could take the forklift almost anywhere. Almost anywhere.
Almost anywhere?
Yeah.
That seems ridiculous.
That was written by that sentence courtesy of Ben Franklin.
So here's the thing. Because I did not know that, I assumed that, like there was a bunch of stuff that I found by accident. And so, like, I accidentally spilled out the floor wax and solved the
Oh, I never, ever would have figured out that you had to chop the fucking power cord to the waxer with the axe. That makes
the cord and the axe are, like,
sense.
Right there.
Yes, but that's not, like...
The big problem with IF is that because it presents itself as a story in which you can do just about anything, the solution to a puzzle could be just about anything.
That is a problem just sort of in the genre itself, because it's like
people come out of the wall. People are more aware of that problem and design their games with that
multiple
in mind,
solutions,
with lots of solutions and very good clues and things like that. But
so they
back
were limited.
In the day,
I mean, Infocom
was
limited
was
by
worse.
Their games having to fit on the sort of smallest consumer floppy disks, right? So, like, single-sided, single-density Apple II floppy disks.
Oh, not,
disk
not like the postage stamp size ones that came out much earlier.
Yeah, like when SIM cards were actually little floppy disks that went into your giant phone.
I was having a lot of problems. I think my frustration mostly was with the syntax and like the interpreter. Like,
oh, it's weird. You couldn't figure out how to talk to
the
hacker.
Not, yeah, like I could not remember the syntax that they wanted, and like having no memory and having no sort of like knowledge of what Infocom wanted me to say or what format they wanted me to say. Like, I tried every natural thing that I could imagine to talk to the hacker, and like nothing worked, and it was pissing me off so much. And like I was like I almost gave up after like half an hour of just trying to like say hello to the hacker. I tried like, I don't know, 50 different things and could not get it to work.
I played on that Java online thing, realized that you couldn't save. I was like dismayed by that. And then the first time I got killed, it was because I went outside and then was in a room with no exits and just slowly had to freeze to death.
Yeah, I ended up only having like 8 save games throughout the whole thing. Hmm. I did a lot of exploring with various save games, figuring out a bunch of puzzles, and then realizing that I had screwed myself in some way going back and then moving forward.
My sort of... I feel like, especially having watched that Get Lamp documentary by that text filesman, whose name I can't remember, Jason Scott? Scott Jasons. Ken Jennings.
It's on the show.
Let's ask Ken Jennings. He'll know.
I can't tell from here.
The Infocom guys seem really cool. I know that, like, Brian Moriarty is one of my sort of favorite people. But my view of the actual games is definitely tinted rosy by nostalgia. Because, those were really cool games when they were the only games that I had ever played.
I mean, you know, I think we have advanced as game players, and the games have stayed the same age.
That's the best thing about them.
Yeah. You know, so we've evolved past these games, and it's I think it is important for us to go back and look at them and be like, okay, you know, this is state of the art. This is what, you know, the best that they could do.
And it makes you appreciate the new interactive fiction games a lot more.
Yeah.
I don't know that was ever the state of the art.
You think?
Right? I mean, for a while when, like, Colossal Cave was the only game that there was, I think the industry happened in spite of text adventures. I mean, text adventures evolved into graphical adventures, evolved into sort of nothing except for the stuff that Telltale is making now, right? But I don't think that, like, at the time, I think most people who were playing video games were not necessarily interested in Infocom games, right? Like, they were like, oh, this has way worse graphics than my Nintendo, whatever. Well, I guess there was a few years where that existed, and, I mean, it was like, people who enjoyed playing Atari would never have played an Infocom game, right?
I enjoyed both Atari and Infocom games.
I know,
games.
But you're a nerd.
I'm a nerd to your suggestions.
Yeah. So, yeah, fuck Lurking Horror. Even with a walkthrough, I fucked up and was like, oh, god damn it, and just gave up. Fuck you.
There were a couple of places where I was very, very frustrated with the puzzles.
I mean, I'm curious. What I kind of want is I want a transcript of an Infocom game that is annotated with the thought process of a person who might actually solve it based on, it says here in this room description, there might be a door to the east.
I've forgotten what forum it was, but there's some internet forum that somebody coded a forum bot that anybody on this message board can post an IF command as a post in this forum thread, and the bot will auto reply. We'll play that their post in whatever game they're playing, and then auto reply the results. And so they had like a thread for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and each successive person to post makes the next move in the game. So it's like cooperative IF solving. It was really cool.
There was also a forum that was vaguely similar to that, but for Civilization.
Whoa, Civilization by argue about the next
Civilization by committee. And, like, I don't know that I would have ever had the patience for it or whatever, but it sounded fascinating. These are, like, very high-level sort of people who play Civ on, like, the highest difficulty setting talking about what they wanted to do next. And, like, you know, arguments about whether it was, you know, diplomacy was better or, like, you know, war or whatever. And, like...
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Like, Parliament...
Yeah, and it was like the idea that, you know, the fact that that kind of thing exists was very pleasing to me, although I don't know that I could participate in it specifically. Wow,
just when I thought that nothing could possibly be dorkier than Model UN.
Civilization by forum.
Yeah.
You know what we should do is, going back to Lurking Horror, not as an assignment, but we should play Anchorhead. Because that is a modern IF game that is of the Lovecraftian. H.P. Lovecraft theme. And
I don't think I played that. I think I might have started it, but I never played through it.
Yeah.
Like, looking at, like, I must admit that, like, having played through it, you know, probably 10 years ago and then, you know, 20 years before, like, 10 years before that or whatever, like...
Was there any cool MIT stuff in there you recognize?
I mean, everything. Like, the whole thing, the whole structure of it is just MIT. Like
is there a weather dome?
There is,
top
on top of the... So instead of the brown building, it's the green building, and on top of the green building is this big white sphere, which is, like, where all the Earth atmosphere and planetary science, like, machinery is. It's, like, a big, like, microwave dome. I've actually been in there for, like, a photo shoot at some point. And, like, you know, there's the demonic summoning chambers and stuff like that. Like, that's just straight, no.
Oh, okay.
There are a bunch of places, spaces called, the coffin is a real place. And that kind of thing. Like, there's a bunch of places that are between where buildings were built that, like, they didn't match up. And so you can get into these weird spaces and stuff like that. It's the culture. It was cool the way that it embodied the MIT culture.
Of going underneath elevator shafts and shit.
Yeah. I mean, that's something you definitely do.
And solving absurd civil engineering puzzles with hooks and locks. And, you know, here is the thing.
Frightening urchins.
I think that I had been so, for whatever reason, it never, ever occurred to me that the solution to that padlock on the thing in the Tomb of the Unknown Tool or whatever was a key. To the padlock.
Really?
Yeah.
That was like the first thing I tried. It's a master key. It unlocks every lock.
Oh, I never, ever would have even been aware of the existence of the master key if it hadn't been for the...
Really? You ask him about his keys?
What keys?
The ones that are described when you look at them.
Okay.
Like, you have to read everything.
Okay.
Everything is there. You look at him, there's a ring of keys on his thing. And, like, once I know how to fucking talk to him...
Do you have to ask him about his beard?
No.
Do you have to ask him about his... Do you have to use his master mustache?
But you can, right? Like, I feel like that is part of the process, right? Is, you know, if you're stuck, there's been some detail that was mentioned that you have not looked at.
Also, the whole game being on a timer is a huge turnoff to me. I guess you never run out of Coke.
Yeah.
It's like the 80s in that regard.
But you have to carry it with you.
Yeah.
The encumbrance limit was very frustrating to me, and I did not realize that the more tired you got, the lower your encumbrance was, and I had foregone carrying the Coke around because I was like, this is just taking up space. But yeah,
what are the funny bones are there to do nothing, right?
I don't know what those are for.
Yeah, that's just to, that's just to try to get you to, you know, you think, oh, I'll give these to the hacker, and then he's like, no, fuck you.
I mean, the assignment,
fuck
the assignment
you
doesn't do anything.
Signed Infocom. Yeah.
There's a bunch of stuff that you don't need, I think.
Yeah. So Riff had an idea for this week's assignment.
Yep. Marathon 2 Durandal, which you can get for free on, what was it, marathon.sourceforge?
Yeah, marathon.sourceforge.net.
And it's also on Xbox Live Arcade.
You have to use an emulator called Alephone, which is about drinking beer and then ill-advisedly dialing your ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it might actually be Aleph-1.
No, I think you're right. I think it's Alephone.
You will have to mess with the key configs and mouse
Christ.
Sensitivity
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, you will.
Because
the defaults are so
that,
bad.
That was way before WASD was really a thing.
Oh, yeah. Wow. It's a lot of the same stuff, but the feel, like, I spent, like, maybe 10 minutes before the show playing with it, and it is so unpolished compared to like current generation FPS type stuff that it's like, wow.
Yep.
We've come a long way.
It's one of my
weird,
total favorite games back in the day.
Weird ass port too. Like all I was doing was playing the first Marathon.
Oh, yeah.
And it was apparently like, it starts you out in the middle of the last level of some totally like alternate reality,
of the previous game,
different game that used the same engine. And like,
it
why?
Wasn't even,
what?
Well, it was a similar engine. It was Pathways into Darkness, which was like a game of that sort even before like Doom came out, I think it was. It was way early.
Here's a question. Was Marathon actually a good series of games, or was it only remarkable because, oh my god, it's a game on a Macintosh? Because that was always the impression that I had.
No, they're good.
I never
they're
played
really
it,
good.
So this is this new. It's new to me.
We're going to see. We were going to do Carmageddon, but it turns out there's nowhere to get it.
Yeah, I would like to figure out a way to be able to play that. We would probably, given the option, play Carmageddon 2.
Okay. In fact, Def Leppard asks me, are you getting Carmageddon? And I said, no, I'm not. I wish that the internet gods would see fit to pour some sugar on me. Yeah. Rocket. Pandemonium.
Yeah, if we can't play Carmageddon, maybe we'll play Karma Chameleon instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So yeah, that's the assignment. Sweet segment, bros. Hey, are you guys ready for reader mail hot dogs?
Sure am.
Okay.
Are they going to actually send us hot dogs in the mail?
I hope so. P.O. Box 41774, Mesa, Arizona, zip code.
And what if they want to send us some electronic hot dogs?
Whoa. That'd be kind of...
Do androids dream of electronic hot
dogs? I think they do.
Are they made out of electronic sheep buttholes?
And lips.
Are they kosher electronic hot dogs for the electronic Jews?
No, I am serious though. If people want to send us questions, how do they do so, Zach?
Oh yeah, no, I forgot that's a thing that we have to say. Well, you can send an email to vghotdog@gmail.com.
Okay.
You can go to videogameshotdog.com and look at a list of all of the things that I just said and a bunch of things that I'm about to say. You can find us on Twitter @vghotdog, or you can go to videogameshotdog.com again and look. At the email address and the Twitter address again.
But not actually send us anything. You can just look at them.
There's also a link to forums, which is where most of our questions come from. Yeah.
That's true.
Do we have a dedicated hot dog forum yet?
We don't. I'll make one.
Will you?
Yep. I will. Because people want threads for the play along.
Yeah,
play
I think,
along with hot dog.
I think having a separate thread for each show and a separate thread for each assignment.
I do not know about a separate thread for each show.
You don't think
I don't
people
know,
want to discuss
I don't know if I believe that. Maybe they do.
I mean, we could let them decide that and make the
okay,
threads.
Okay, we should at least have a separate thread for each assignment.
We should sticky the assignments.
Sticky the current assignments.
Yes. Sticky the assignments.
And you should have a new questions thread in there where we can ask for new questions.
We don't need new questions.
About like questions about news.
We haven't finished the old questions yet.
Well,
hey,
sure.
Speaking of news, because this is the news segment of the podcast, I'm going to read the news in a funny voice. I'm not really going to read the news in a funny voice, but they have repurposed the television and something segment of the National Endowment for the Arts, and is now it now encompasses video games.
Nice.
Instead of TV or.
Nope. Including
okay. So you're competing against television
web page
so
stuff.
So now we can get a video game where you have to put a little model of Jesus in a jar of pee.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
I was reading about that just the other day.
Really?
Like somebody recently finally successfully like broke.
Oh yeah, I heard about it. Like that. I don't think they broke the original. They messed up like the photographs.
Somebody fucked up Piss Christ.
Yeah.
Like some fundamentalist vandals.
Oh, I see.
Because yeah, wasn't it, I don't think, as I recall, the actual literal jar of pee is not the museum object. It's photographs of that. And that's what they destroyed.
You would think that would have evaporated by now.
Yeah.
Unless it was sealed.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think you would seal that stuff.
Or, alternatively, he could have drunk a bunch of formaldehyde before he peed in it. So then, both the
formaldehyde
piss
does not
and the Christ, yeah, formaldehyde evaporate. Doesn't evaporate.
Huh.
I've seen formaldehyde in jars from like 700 years ago.
With no lids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I had a science teacher in grade school that had a two-faced kitten in a jar of formaldehyde.
Cool.
Formaldehyde.
I had a jar of dinosaur water when I was a kid.
Dinosaur water.
Yeah. I don't know. It was some water with some dirt in it, and it said that it was super old. And I think my mom probably paid a lot of money for it, and it probably was just tap water.
I mean, tap water is pretty old.
Right. I mean, that's the thing, right? Like all of those water molecules have been probably around for billions of years.
They were all in the last piss that Caesar took.
That's right. I was going to say Napoleon, well, but
that
yes.
That whole breath, every atom of carbon
mm-hmm.
has
nonsense.
Has been
it's all nonsense.
Breathed by Caesar or something.
So Wack wrote, stale seems good or bad.
Wow.
Sales on Steam, good or bad. I mean, I think good for you,
yeah,
the consumer.
Good for, yeah.
I've gone both ways, right? So like I had a
that's one of the recurring themes of video games hot dog.
I have made a list of video games and then waited until the holiday sale and to buy them all. And I have just completely eschewed a current sale to buy a full price game.
Hmm.
So, you know,
I generally, if I see a game that I really want to play, I buy it, but I wait until a sale to buy something I'm kind of on the fence about.
Yeah, I mean, last weekend I bought Metro 2033 because it was on sale for $10, and I played it for an hour, and now I don't feel like I need to play it for another hour because I, you know, I saw what it was all about. I didn't really enjoy it, but the fact that I only spent $10 on it means, yeah, you know.
So I enjoyed watching an LP of that.
Hmm.
And you, by LP, you mean a
Let's Play.
Let's Play. Because yes. I feel like watching a record of a game
yeah.
would be really boring. Yes.
From LP Archive. I think LPArchive.com. I think that's the URL I use.
It's very linear and cinematic. It's not, mm-hmm. you know, I was hoping for...
Exactly. So that's
I was hoping for something out of that
watch,
like, sort of new Russian sensibility that gave us Stalker.
The mechanic of having shitty bullets and also really nice bullets, but the really nice bullets are your currency too. I thought that was pretty cool.
I guess if the game presents you with situations where you cannot survive without actually firing the nice bullets, otherwise, oh, these are the way that I interpreted that system as a player was cool currency that I can accidentally throw away.
I mean, isn't it also just currency that instead of having to go to a shop to buy ammo,
good
you can
bullets.
Just use your
yeah.
currency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I, you know, I don't know. I don't know that I've ever not. I am pretty reluctant to buy games, for full price on Steam. Right. Like when something comes out, until I know
I bought
that it is good.
Portal 2 at full price.
But you know that Portal 2 is going to be good.
Sure.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. Like I would buy. You know, I guess I bought Rift at full price on Steam, which was probably dumb. I probably could have waited a couple months, and Rift will be $19.
But because of the multiplayer aspect of it, you wanted to play it when a bunch of other people were playing.
That's true.
So that's
true.
That's,
and also, frequently, because I'm me, I wanted to play it right now.
You know, there is definitely, like, the sort of the multiplayer aspect of a lot of these games, there's definitely some value to buying it when everybody else is buying it and when everybody else is new to it. And the sort of everybody's having that same new player experience. You know, that's worth paying a premium for, I think. I also play a bunch of games that are like 3 and 4 years old, and so, you know, or 10 or 15 years old. Like I bought, you know, a bunch of LucasArts games and stuff like that for like $5 on
sure.
Steam mm-hmm. and with on the sale. And you know,
that's were those great. On sale or was that just how much
that was
they
on
cost?
Sale?
Yeah,
there was a deal on the bundle or
on
something.
The bundle. Yeah,
yeah.
So it was like not $5 each, like $5 for like 10 of them or something.
I have probably collectively spent more money on Steam on games that were on sale than I have on games that weren't on sale.
I've also bought a bunch of games that I've never downloaded or played yet.
Oh, me too. Me too. Which is kind of nice, because sometimes when I'm just like, oh, I'm in the mood for a new game, and where normally I would just go buy something and it would suck and then I would have wasted the money on it. It's like, oh, I'll just install and play something that I bought 6 months ago.
Which, that's kind of cool that that's a thing that one can do, you know, is as long as Steam sticks around. Like, if they go under or if Valve just ceases to be, I'm going to be kind of annoyed that I'd never downloaded those games and installed them, you know?
I'm sure they'll... I mean, they're not going to suddenly disappear unless there's some kind of catastrophe. I mean, they might say, we're turning it all off in 6 months. You should download all your shit now.
You know, like, but, how much do you use your Walkman from, you know, 15 years ago, right?
If I still have it.
Right. And so how much do you think you're going to be using your computer 15 years from now?
That's a good...
You're going to
be... Well, but the difference
is... You're
going
to be riding
is,
your hollow bike down to the...
The difference is that I will probably have software on that new computer that will allow me to play the
I'm saying computers games. Computers entirely just won't be around.
Oh, I see.
My feeling about
There will be software in my brain that will allow me to download.
Maybe. You know, if there I am not at all worried about this like sort of apocalyptic, you know, shutdown of Steam at some point in the future, because let's imagine that in order to play my original floppies of Space Quest 1, there had been some Sierra Online service that I had to authenticate against. Okay, well, I can either steal this or I can pay $5 for it. And that will be available to me at any point in the future, no matter what happens with Steam, no matter what happens with any of these other things. Like, you know, I will... If I decided that we were going to play Master of Orion 2 for one of these assignments, which one day we will, I'm just going to buy a copy of it because it's like $5.
Right.
Yeah. It's $5 in a package that, and you know, I already own it. I could track down the CD, install it, and try to get it working, or I could just let good old games have done that work for me for $5 and just buy it again.
Right.
And so
I guess I don't understand what you're saying.
That I'm not worried about Steam taking something away from me that I paid $50 for 10 years from now, because I will be able to buy it for 10 cents.
I see.
If
somebody on Bombcast recently commented that he'd bought a game on Steam because he was too lazy to get up and go to the other side of the room where the box was on the shelf.
Right. But you also know when you get it that it's got the recent patches and everything. I mean, it's just...
Kind of.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
You know... Sure, I'm not... I guess my frustration is, like, I wanted to play Carmageddon 2, and that game is not something that I can probably play on my computer, my modern computer.
That is a shame.
And so...
I tried to play a little bit of Carmageddon 1, but I couldn't get the controls.
Yeah.
I mean, that isn't DRM's fault. That isn't isn't online authentication's fault, right? I mean, it's just things that happen.
Carmageddon no, but, 2, like if I had a computer that I had installed that on, and... still had that computer around, I could go back and play it on that computer. Whereas if I don't download these games, who's to know whether they'll be playable in 10 years?
For years, I had this 486-66 that was... It was one of those Packard Bell computers that was like the computer and the monitor in one box, and speakers. Like, and so it...
Like an iMac?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was like a PC version of the iMac. But it had been my dad's old computer, and when he got a new one, he was just like, yeah, you know, do whatever you want with that. So I just hung on to it, and I had DOS installed on it, and I would use it to play my old games. But then DOSBox came around, and there's just no reason to do that anymore.
Right.
It's like, all right, I'm glad I still know how to fuck with autoexec.bat and config.sys to get this goddamn sound blaster on the right IRQ to make some noises. You know, and now all that shit's done for you. And it's only going to get better, right? Like, there are only going to be more and more old games available online over time. The people who are thinking about preserving these things are, you know...
But some things, like, the good ones that people all recognize as good, sure. But there are some little games that I don't know that you could find, you know, things from your childhood that you won't be able to find again.
But I think that you will. My argument is that there are enough people who care about this and can, you know... can pull things off of the single existing 5 1/4 inch floppy that this game exists on, and we'll put it up somewhere where you can find it.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a much bigger
sesquipedalian words.
People are hoarders these days to a much larger degree than what they used to be.
Or to put it more kindly, people are a lot better archivists of old technology stuff than they were of, like, you know, Civil War era letters or whatever, right? Because those shits are boring. All Civil War letters were about shits that the soldiers had taken individually. And while you can look at a handful, you know, like, oh, this is what shitting was like during the Civil War, you don't want to read every single one of them.
You don't want to read the ones that have been used as some sort of makeshift toilet paper.
You know, we were talking earlier in the show about that text files guy, Jason Statham. I wish I could remember that guy's name. You know, I could just stop the recording and go look
at the others on the other side of the room. Or you could go buy a digital copy.
I could buy a digital copy of textfiles.com. Is it even? I think it's textfiles.org.
So,
you guys, when you were kids, collect not kids, but like when you like, I had all kinds of shit that was just like bomb recipes and stuff.
Oh yeah, I had
like
a bunch of those.
Yeah. Did you
hacking
not
tips?
See, I would have thought that you, being your MIT
50 ways to confuse
bridge and
your
tunnel
roommate.
Crowd, your tunnel, the MIT
roof,
tunnel
roof
plungers,
and tunnel,
yeah. Roof and tunnel
hacker.
I have. Hackers, I had somewhere. I might still have it. The giant MIT lockpicking guide text file.
Yeah, that's a good thing to have.
A lot of text files, a lot of terrible text.
It was
files.
It was a LaTeX file, actually.
Mm-hmm. Cool, some bullshit technology that nobody likes.
Yeah,
I'm sure there are lots of nerds that like LaTeX.
I still see papers published in LaTeX, and I'm like, and it's just so obvious, like it has a look like unlike anything that modern, you know.
Personally, I'm allergic to it, and that's why, baby, I'm gonna have to blow this load on your tits.
Textfiles.com. So, in other words, sales on Steam are great.
Yeah. Starwed asks if anybody's played any text adventures lately. Yeah, we played the goddamn Lurking Horror.
Played freaking Lurking Horror. And after I got finished with that, I played a little bit of The Gostak, which is bizarre.
I spent some time playing the Twitter IF games.
Oh, nice.
A lot of them are inscrutable.
What Twitter IF games are you talking about?
There was a contest to write an entire game in 140 characters or less.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Not counting spaces.
Not counting spaces, which, of course, a couple of people took advantage of that loophole to write
that stuff in that white space language.
The white space language, yeah. Okay. But the ones that were actually true to form, were kind of in like, they were kind of games, but not really.
Yeah. Jokes.
Yeah. Mostly jokes.
I had a couple in that.
Were they written in Form 7?
Yeah.
Some of them. A lot of them. Some were written in like Perl or.
In Form 7. You know, Sidetta me snow they aga blam. A licky boom boom down.
What?
Starwit says, it's gotten to the point where you can play most of them in browser, which is pretty convenient.
What?
Lost Pig is short, amusing, clever, in a not very frustrating way, and you're an orc. I did not like Lost Pig at all.
I couldn't really get into it. I didn't give it a good try.
I think it won or came, it placed pretty highly in one of the IF comps maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. I have not kept up with the recent IF comps. I have like 2000 to 2005.
Every once in a while, maybe every other year, I will be like, all right, I'm going to do it this year. I'm going to participate in this, and then I will play three of them, and two of them will just be god-awful, and I'll be like, you know what? Fuck this. I cannot spend the amount of time that they want you to spend before giving this.
Jenny makes a serious point of playing every IF comp game. Every year.
She does good reviews, too. I tend to review about half of them before getting bored, and you can see those reviews on minimumsafedistance.org. But
and also reviews of shitty toys from eggs.
Yes, yes, the gigantic shitty Kinder Egg project.
Are you
going to
wallpaper an entire house with shitty puzzles?
I've only actually gotten two of those shitty cardboard puzzles so far, but they were the same one.
You could do the instructions. You could wallpaper a wall with all the instructions for all the different.
Here's what you should do: you should put both of the puzzles together. Turn one of them 90 degrees and glue it to the back of the other one and then take them apart again.
Because that's how puzzles work.
Yeah. And then you've made a new puzzle. Starwood continues. Any other especially good text adventures you'd recommend? The few I've played are Galatea, Lost Pig, Anchorhead, Rover's Day Out, and Aotearoa, and they were all thoroughly enjoyable.
I don't know that last one, but there's others I will confirm as being good.
Photopia is really good,
it's very linear.
Don't start with that. Like, play some other text adventures and then play Photopia as a like, oh wow, this is a thing.
The Gostak is interesting to check out. I think there's another one that's got a similar. So the twist in the Gostak is that every noun and verb in the game is not in English. It's in like a made up alien language. So you have to
learn to say things.
What's going on. Yeah, and the parser is included, so you have to figure out what the verb is to look at things and stuff like that.
It's neat, but it is less neat, I think, than what's that one? I think it is called For a Change.
For a Change, right. Or the Time where, for a Change, or something like that.
The one where only the nouns are replaced with a foreign thing. So that one I feel like is a lot more scrutable.
Yeah,
right? It's less interesting as like a puzzle experience, but it's more fun as a video game.
There's also basically anything by Andrew Plotkin is really good.
Those are hard. They're not for beginners. Spider and Web's well done and well known, but it is tricky.
Yes. Yes. And Rematch is a really good one.
Rematch is super interesting, because it's the theme of that. You have one move, and you, in trying to figure out what that move is, you get the feedback necessary to refine that one move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It ends up being a really intricate and complicated move, too.
Yeah, but it doesn't really break the rules of, like, the typical Infocom parser, right? It's just, like...
I think they had to improve a little bit on... because it's got some, like, you know, clauses that the regular parser would not normally be able to interpret, but...
Slouching Towards Bedlam is one that I really liked a lot. That one is cool because it incorporates, like, saving and loading into the fiction of the game, which I thought was really clever. What else is good?
If I had my list in front of me, I would...
Yeah.
I would have, like, I mean, and there are some old Infocom games that were kind of, I mean, like, Leather Goddesses of Phobos is kind of funny.
I never played Leather Goddesses of Phobos.
It's a fun one.
I certainly enjoyed Wishbringer.
Yeah.
Because that was easy, right? That was designed to be a beginner thing. It was still too hard. I think my problem is that I don't read things. When there are words,
I was getting that sense that, like, you were having all these problems, and I was like, but it said to do this thing, or, like, it gave you this big hint, or whatever, and, like, I probably missed a bunch of stuff, too.
Emily Short's stuff tends to be really good. I can't think of a particular title off the top.
Long tall glass of sherbet, like the elephant, the elephant, the moon, and a long tall glass of sherbet, or something.
Something like that. I don't think I played that.
Legion won one of the IF comps fairly recently, and that one is pretty good.
Yeah,
because you're not really a corporeal being in it, and so you figuring out the rules of the game world are sort of interesting in that.
That's cool.
God, there was one that I thought of while somebody else was talking, and this is why I have to interrupt people all the time, because I just lose my train of thought otherwise. Also, it's a way to demonstrate my alpha status. It was when I was thinking about Photopia. It was another one that was kind of in... damn it. Okay, next question.
I want to recommend the Frotts app if you happen to have an iPad.
Also, really nice. Not Just an Ordinary Ballerina was pretty good.
Oh, yeah? I've never even heard of that one.
It's from, like, 2000. It was an IF comp game. It was, like, one of the winners. It's just really neat and moody. And it, like, not... Like, it's not fantasy or anything like that. It just feels like... It's just set in the real world, kind of. It's just cool.
Galatea, I thought, was boring. And I never played Anchorhead. Yeah, man... I wish that I could think of the one that I was going to recommend. It's so awesome. It's like the best. It's the Totes Best Towns game. Ernie Q says, is it a problem that so many games are sequels? Some of my favorite games.
Yeah.
Master of Orion 2, Star Control 2.
I mean, Portal 2.
Star Control 2 being, like, basically the best video game in the world to me that it is okay that a lot of games are sequels. I mean, there is... I feel like to lament... a lack of innovation in AAA games is just you're just kind of screaming into a canyon, right? Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter.
It
doesn't matter that there's a lack of innovation in AAA games because that's not what AAA games are for.
I like innovation, but if I really enjoy a game, there's a good chance I will also really enjoy another game in that same world.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times they redo the systems pretty significantly such that it's just thematically a sequel, right? Like, I don't have any problem. Like, attaching a number to a title doesn't really mean anything,
They announced some more DLC for Fallout New Vegas, by the way.
Yeah, I heard
Did you play Dead Money?
I did not. I heard it wasn't very good.
You know, I heard that too, but I loved it.
Really?
I loved it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's even better than loved.
It is. I don't know. I thought it was great. What I like in DLC for Fallout games is a kind of a self-contained thing, right? And this was a self-contained thing. Like, at the end, it presents you with this, like, you can only take out the shit that you can carry.
It's really funny.
And it, I mean, spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't played Dead Money, but the end game, you get into this vault with just hundreds of gold bars that sell for more caps than anything, but they are super, super heavy. And you can only carry, like, maybe 4 or 5 of them if your stats are maxed out and if you throw away everything else you've collected during the entire thing. And you can't win if you're encumbered. So, like, it does this timed escape thing where it is so mean.
Nice.
So mean, but so awesome.
I'll have to get those. I haven't finished the main campaign of New Vegas yet, so that's
neither have I. I'm stuck in that. I want to feel like that's kind
of
an mode.
Advantage though, because the level cap, the end of Fallout of New Vegas is the end. You would have to reload to a saved game anyway to play the DLC. Yeah. So
which you do. I mean, they encapsulate the end game a lot better than Fallout 3 did, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like a thing that you started and then you play it out, and that's how the game ends, right? And you just being right before you did that, it's a lot more of a like, are you sure you want to do this? This is going to make the game end. Uh-huh. Then in Fallout 3, where it was just like, meh.
Do they actually explicitly say that?
They don't. I don't think
you just have to know it.
You know, I mean, you know when a game asks you, "Are you sure you want to leave?" I mean, it'll say you won't be able to come back here.
Right.
Right. Maybe it did explicitly say something like that. Okay. But yeah, they've announced 3 more. Like there are going to be 4 total, like there were for Fallout 3.
I hope
released between now and July. So
I hope the engine can handle it the way that it couldn't on the PS3 for the last Fallout 3 expansions.
Well, you heard about that Xbox bullshit, right? Like, they released a patch to Fallout New Vegas for the Xbox that was in preparation for the new DLC, mm-hmm. but if you downloaded it and installed it, I'm pretty sure it corrupted all your saves.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and so they were like immediately, fuck, don't download that, don't download that, don't download that. And I would imagine that if Microsoft's process is anything like dealing with iTunes, it's like, if I uploaded an episode of Video Games Hot Dog to iTunes and then realized that listening
that
to it
erased all
was,
your saves.
Well, no, was going to like castrate you as a listener. I would not be able to get rid of it. Like I would like delete it, but it would still be there. And I'd be like, fuck, no.
Yeah. You have to say it at that pitch because you had already listened to it.
Yeah, I listened to it once. Yeah.
I was so sad at the original Fallout 3 that installing all that DLC made, well, what was the name of the last one? The swamp one.
Point Lookout.
It was just not playable.
Huh.
It was so laggy and crashed like
whoa.
Every 15 minutes.
Huh.
It was not playable and it sucked so bad.
And that was my favorite piece of
DLC. Fixed all of that.
It is amazing how that game is so great that I will overlook bugs that would just send me railing against other games.
Yep. I mean, same for me, but there is a limit to my patience.
Yep. I mean, I don't know, man. Like, I would not want to play that game on a console. Mm-hmm. Like, crashes on consoles piss me off so much more than crashes on PCs. Because crashes on PCs, I can at least be like, oh, I'm sure I did something wrong. But a console, it's like, oh, I picked the wrong video card for my console. No, I didn't. I didn't pick that video card.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, baby. I had to crash that video card. All right, Light Ninja says, any recommendations when it comes to picking up a gamepad? Ideally, I would want something customizable so it can handle most video game console emulations. I mean, if you buy a USB gamepad, all it is like a keyboard, right? So they're pretty much all, in my experience, infinitely customizable. And I think you get the cheapest one they have. Like,
I think I've gotten like a $10 one and have never
mine's
had any
like
complaints.
A Nostromo something or other that I got like 10 years ago or more, and it still works fine.
It sucked though, because when you got there, it was full of alien eggs. I think I'd bought some like $10 Logitech gamepad at Best Buy, and I held onto it for 4 or 5 years, and then I pulled it out of the box to play Spiral Knights and did that, and it was fine.
Huh.
I've not played any more Spiral Knights. I have this problem with like free-to-play plus microtransaction games where I will play them, like them enough that I want to give them some money, and then just totally lose interest. Like,
yeah,
I played...
Because you've given them money?
I don't know. Like, Neptune's Pride, I was like, ah, this was awesome. That was fun. I am going to give them $20. And so I bought $20 worth of the, like, tokens that you can use to create new games and stuff. And I was like, I'm going to wait to play this again.
I play free to play games enough to decide whether or not I should be afraid of the competition.
Yeah. With Spiral Knights, I paid for this stuff. It has a really interesting, like, they have, it seems like people are moving away from this, like, assurance that the larger industry has had for so long that you cannot allow any interaction between the player economy and the microtransaction economy, right? Because Spiral Knights, it's like an interface element. You don't even have to go somewhere to sell your microtransaction currency for regular currency. It is just like it is on the menu. There is this always available just marketplace where it's weird. It seems to really force the market to be competitive, right? Because it will show you, all right, this is the cheapest energy that is currently for sale, and it just shows you the five cheapest, and that's it. You can't buy it from anybody who's not the cheapest. And then it says, this shows you the least or the most that people are willing to pay on buy orders on the other side. So if you're selling, you just go in there and you get however much money the person who's offering the most money is offering for it.
Huh.
It is just super, super,
it looks
like
it looks
focused
really
on keeping
people
honest.
Up for people who want to do arbitrage.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know if there's like a fee assessed that stops them from doing that. I wonder if you could, I'm sure you could. Right, but the thing is I bought all this currency and then I was like, well, so I could just convert this all to shit and gear up, but then that's not really playing.
I thought it was weird that there didn't seem to be an auction hall for in-game objects, just for the currency.
Yeah, I don't think you can sell stuff.
I saw people in chat advertising.
Well, if you just, but, I mean, sure, I don't
not,
think it's not from
an
giving
automatic.
People stuff, trading, yeah, you know, yeah. trading stuff. But yeah, there's no, I don't think there's like an auction house.
Yeah, there's no.
Because I was looking for one to see where to go to sell my microtransaction currency, but it turns out that's just that. It was really surprising. Like, I mean, it's, and you know, nobody seems to care. It's like a good game. I gave him some money, and then I stopped playing. But that's the thing. I didn't want to just sell it all and then go buy gear and then just go play some more, because then it's like, okay, here I am, got better gear. Like, there wasn't any. If there had been a way that I could have unlocked a new set of level textures or whatever, like a new, like, tile set.
Yeah.
And new levels in that tile set, I would have done that in a heartbeat, and then I would have played it. Like, I think what I want
is gateways to more content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Not just, like, it is somehow fundamentally dissatisfying to me to buy a +5 sword instead of earning a +5 sword by killing a +4 skeleton.
So, yeah. Like, RuneScape that locks you out of a significant chunk of the game if you do not donate.
I think I feel better about that, maybe.
You do.
Or I would feel better about that as a player.
Huh. Interesting.
So, yeah, that's what we think about Gamepad.
Yeah. We're bad at keeping on topic. Yeah.
All right, well, that's enough. That's enough viewer question mail. Our viewers are
listener
clad
supported.
In finest mithril question mail. Yeah, thanks cool. for listening to Video Games Hot Dog, yeah. everybody.
Have
yeah.
a great week.
See you next
love
week.
You. I'm just kidding. We don't love you. Okay, we totally love you.